Well, well, well. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's been forever. I feel like I have to apologize, but I'm not going to. I just want to acknowledge it's been a really long ass time since the last show, simply because things are crazy, you know. I don't want to make excuses, but shit happens. Good things, you get busy, you know, you do other things, but eventually I find myself coming back to the podcast simply because of you guys. Really, honestly speaking, it's, you know, as my guest on this episode actually says very, a lot more articulately than I can ever express, that, you know, no one really, we don't do what we do. You don't write reviews, you don't host a website, you don't post stuff on a blog or do a podcast for, you know, just in a vacuum, as she put it. You do it for other people, you do it for, you know, the love of doing it. And when that love gets reciprocated and, you know, people respond, you guys give feedback, you know, we have conversation. I personally, I've made a lot of cool friends through Twitter, Facebook, and just other mediums, you know, because of my website and this podcast more specifically. I've met a lot of people who have similar interests, who do similar things, and honestly speaking, they do it so much better than I do. But regardless of whatever else is going on, I find myself coming back to the podcast. This is a way to for me to communicate with all you guys, and hopefully sometimes you guys communicate back. So it kind of works out, and it's fulfilling. You know, you have your passion kind of reciprocated by other people. You get to share it with other people. It's fun. So we are back. And in this episode, this is actually episode 13 of the Split Screen Podcast, the official podcast of blankpagebeatdown.com. And my guest today is Aaron E. Fraser from the podcast Bollywood is for Lovers. And we're actually going to be talking about the 1989 movie, Bollywood movie, Parinda, and its remake in Hollywood by the same director, by Vidhu Vinod Chopra. And that movie is entitled Broken Horses, that came out in 2015. But before that, let's talk about let me take a minute to talk about why I've been so busy, the things I've been doing, and you know what I've been up to the last couple of weeks. So as some of you may or may not know, TV season is over. All the season finales of all the shows that I usually watch are basically done. So if you go to the website blankpagebeatdown.com, you'll see a lot of reviews that's going to be coming up. Some of them are already up, but a lot of reviews for some of the TV shows that I watch, mostly the superhero shit, because I love that. So I'm gonna be reviewing a lot of those, and I was wondering if anyone's interested in doing a episode on Split Screen where we actually talk about mostly specifically the superhero TV shows that are currently on the CW network, which is Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and even Supergirl, if anyone's taking a gander at that. I'm just wondering if anyone wants to have a conversation about that. We could talk about, you know, the universe that the CW has set up with these shows intersecting. Throw me a line on Twitter at the Shah Shahid or anywhere else, really, and let me see what you guys want to do. All right, so now let's move on to some housekeeping. Not really housekeeping. I want to come back to you guys, the fans of the show. I've always promised that if you leave me a 5-star review, well, it doesn't have to be a 5-star review. It can be any review, really. I'll still read it. I don't care. I'm vain. I just need the feedback. But if I've always said if you leave a review online, I will definitely read it for you on the air. So I've got a new review. It's a little old. I actually didn't end up checking it because it's on the US site. Being in Canada, the iTunes, you gotta change the store so you can go look at it. It's kind of a tedious process. Not that I don't do it often. Again, like I said, I'm vain. But I've got a review on iTunes. This is from username Assistant Scott. He gave me a 5-star review for the Split Screen Podcast. Thank you so much, Scott, the assistant. He writes, and I'm quoting, "The idea of this podcast is very clever. Bollywood remakes so many movies from other countries and from other parts of India too. That it's fun to hear how the reboots compare to the originals. Really enjoy listening to Shah and his guests." Scott, thank you so much. You don't understand what this does to my self-esteem. I'm going to go around being an arrogant prick for like a good week after reading this. So thank you for myself, and you know, everyone else must hate you because they have to suffer me being a prick after reading your amazing review. So thank you so much for that. If anyone else wants to be like Scott, because he's awesome, whoever's assistant you are, Scott, by the way, Lucky to have you, buddy. Lucky to have you. If you want to be like Scott, go on to iTunes or any country store and leave us a review for the Spitzkin podcast. Give me any feedback. Like I said, even if it's a bad review, I'll still read it on the air. Feedback is what makes us improve, so why the fuck not? And that's basically everything for today. Let's get to the show. Let's talk to Erin. She's one of the more knowledgeable film persons I know. She makes me look like, she talks about film and I'm just sitting there, I've come across as like a toddler on a lollipop that, this is sweet. So listen to the podcast. This is episode 13 of the Split Screen Podcast. I haven't done this in so long, I can't even speak properly, you see that? So episode 13 of the Split Screen Podcast featuring Erin E. Fraser from Bollywood is for Lovers, comparing Parinda and its remake, Broken Horses. Enjoy, guys. Ladies, gents, dysfunctional siblings everywhere, welcome to a long overdue episode of the Split Screen Podcast, the official podcast of blankpagebeatdone.com. I am your previously dying but now fully recovered host, Shah Shahid, and this will be episode 13, and it's kind of a weird show for the 13th episode. Now, usually on the Split Screen Podcast, we compare two movies where one has been remade from the other or the same source material. But this time, we're going to be comparing two movies made and then remade by the same director. He originally made the first movie in Bollywood, and then, God knows how, he remade it in Hollywood with a full Hollywood star cast. The star cast part might be debatable. But as far as I know, this is kind of unprecedented. I don't think anyone else has done that before. So the movies we'll be discussing today are Vidhu Vinod Chopra's Parinda from 1989, and also Vidhu Vinod Chopra's Broken Horses from 2015. But before we get there, let's talk about our guest for today. Now, she has her own Bollywood podcast. Coincidentally, we kind of started our shows around the same time, but hers is a lot more informative than mine. I'm not ashamed to say it. Now, some of you guys may know, I write reviews for, you know, my website, blankpagebeatdone.com. With my writing, I always try to make it a little bit accessible for people who may not know or, you know, are fans of the thing that I'm writing about. Like, for example, my Deadpool review, instead of going, holy fuck, Deadpool is awesome, I kind of try to provide a little bit of perspective for people that don't know who the fuck Deadpool is. Similarly, I do the same thing for my Bollywood reviews, because I find Bollywood is, you know, not as many fans out there for, you know, general moviegoers. But my guest today and her co-host on her podcast, while not being South Asian, not that there's anything wrong with that, are able to present everything about Bollywood with such a clear, concise sort of presentation, and they give all the backstory of the industry, and it's really accessible not only for people who have never heard of Bollywood, who aren't into Bollywood, it's a great jumping off point, but even for someone like me who's grown up, you know, watching these movies, it's still so informative to kind of hear this information that I might have already known presented in such a easier to kind of, you know, consume way that it blows my mind consistently. So enough of my rambling. I want to introduce everyone today to Erin Fraser from the Bollywood is for Lovers podcast. Erin, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. I don't know what to do with all those compliments. Thank you so much.
You just don't worry. I'll bill you later. It's fine. So like I said, you guys have an amazing show, by the way. I appreciate all the shout outs. Like I said, we were talking earlier, I said that I don't think there's one of your shows where you don't just have like a throwaway line mentioned to, you know, Shasha, he did this movie in one of his shows. And I'm sure you guys do it so often, I feel like, you know, I'm like the hidden sponsor of the show where you guys like product placement, you try to work it in casually. You know, but for the record, I'm not paying these guys. So, it's an amazing show. How did you guys get into Bollywood even?
Well, about, I guess, 2.5 years ago, I saw Lutera. So previously I had studied 3 Bollywood films in university, Mother India, Dilse, and a Bimal Roy film that the name escapes me. The one about the rickshaw driver.
See, you know more than me about those already. So.
Yeah, and well, I really liked Dilsey. The
Yes.
other two didn't really excite me. And you know, when you're in university, you're always kind of busy with, okay, what's the next thing? You know, and you're kind of bogged down that I didn't really have the time to explore Bollywood outside of, you know, this one film with Shah Rukh Khan that I was like, this is really interesting. This is really cool. And then 2.5 years ago, I saw Luterra. A friend recommended Luterra to me, and I was floored. And to this day, I still think this is one of the greatest Bollywood films I've ever seen, if not one of the best films of kind of the past 5 years. I really hold that film in high esteem, and it really, you know, kind of hit me. And so I started to get interested in Bollywood, and you know, being free of school, I had a lot more time to explore this interest. And so I started watching a lot of Bollywood films, mostly new releases. And then I started telling Matt about them. And so I think the first film we went to go see in theaters together was Doom 3. And he
Nice.
was completely sold immediately. And then we just started, you know, reading more about them and watching them pretty regularly.
That's probably Doom 3 is probably the perfect first movie for a guy to get into.
I think so. I know a lot of Bollywood fans, you know, who've grown up with the industry and are a lot more familiar with a lot of the classics, kind of can sometimes really turn their nose up to the Doom series. But for us, who I would say are generally more kind of quote unquote serious cinephiles, Bollywood was a big kind of breath of fresh air. And that doesn't mean that there aren't serious films within Bollywood, but you know, just kind of seeing something really fun, really over the top that just really wanted to entertain us was really exciting. It's something that, you know, was dealing with a completely different film language. And you know, after studying film for as many years as I have, and I've worked in an art house cinema here in Edmonton, and I watch 700 movies a year, it was just kind of refreshing.
And I also find it really kind of refreshing because again, I find a lot of times, I mean, I've grown up with the industry. I've watched it from the, you know, back in my country, and then I moved here when I was younger. I grew up here. I went to school here for film and everything else. But I still find with Bollywood movies, there's a certain, like, I'll accommodate a lot of things, which is part of, you know, my cultural upbringing. And then when someone else points it out, I go, oh, I guess, yeah, I guess it's kind of stupid. But whereas on the flip side, again, I'll see movies, like, I have a lot of friends now that, I mean, are non-South, like, you know, are not South Asian, and they've, you know, gotten hooked on the industry a couple of years ago. And I see things I've already seen from their perspective, and I kind of sometimes like it even better. I'm like, oh, this is true. I wrote this off movie earlier because I thought it was cliche, but no, it's, you know, it's not that bad. So I find it's always like an ever-changing kind of perspective. Whereas a lot of Hollywood movies I find are kind of like you like them or you hate them, and even if you get a different perspective from someone else, you're like, no, still shit. You know, so.
Yeah, and I think like from an outsider's perspective, from someone who hasn't grown up with this, who isn't culturally Indian, to find, you know, 100+ years of cinema history to dig into, it's really exciting. And it really is a completely different mode from Hollywood. And I find, you know, so much of our film culture really treats Hollywood as kind of the base. So to find something that's, you know, completely different is really, I really appreciate it.
And say, and you know what? I love seeing you guys go through this journey, on your show, because again, like I said, your show, you guys have topics which are really cool because you go through like phases of the industry, or you go through, you know, a certain actor or a certain director's work. So it's kind of like you are literally really going about covering, you know, the Bollywood industry, you know, in segments or through certain personalities, which I find if you guys keep doing the show for a couple of years, you'll have like a pretty fucking like comprehensive like Bollywood history kind of a anthology podcast series.
Yeah, we're trying. We're always looking for what could be a gateway. So for someone who isn't familiar with Bollywood, so whether it's a director or an actor or a certain style of film that we're seeing a trend, unfortunately, we have a hard time accessing a lot of older titles. So we tend to be focused on kind of the contemporary mainstream cinema. But at the same time, I think it might be easiest to start with the contemporary mainstream cinema and work back in a way. So, you know, we'll do an episode on Cholet eventually. It's sitting at a table. We will watch it. But it's hard sometimes to figure out, you know, when you have, again, like this 100 years of history, what's the best way to start presenting that to your audience?
Well, you guys, again, like, what I love about you guys is because due to the sheer number of movies I watch, I'll always watch a movie and I always compare it to, you know, similar tropes that I've seen in other, you know, movies of the same genre. And what I find is when I'm, you know, when I find a movie that I like because of a certain reason, for example, let's say Dil Dhadakne Do recently, which is, you know, the biggest genre of Bollywood movies, the family dramas, the love stories and all that stuff. I found that movie to be a lot more realistically portrayed about South Asian family dynamics than any other Bollywood movie that I've seen in a long time. When that genre is a speciality of Bollywood movies, you know, like the parent relationships and the children and the love stories and the siblings. They've done movies about those for like, what, 50, 60 years now, but none have as accurately portrayed the dynamics that I grew up living with, or I see other people living with their parents, as that movie. But I find when I'm trying to explain that to people using other movies as references, if they haven't seen those movies, they're kind of like, sure, like, I don't know what you're talking about. So I find that's where you guys are really good, because you'll find that one aspect of you know, Bollywood, and then you'll kind of present a few varying takes on it to kind of properly, you know, portray that, you know, topic or that actor or that filmmaker or that style or that genre. So kudos, well, keep it up.
Thank you. And to be fair, I think Dil Dhadakne Do is a lot more realistic about the relationship between, you know, adult children and their parents, right, and the expectations than any film recent,
of course,
recent memory.
Of course. No, I mean,
I think you need to be, I'm sure there is a lot of kind of ingrained cultural context in that film, but from, again, from my outsiders, my very Caucasian perspective, I related so much to that film.
Yeah, I mean, I also love that the movie didn't, like, the scenes had no conclusive beginning or end, which, again, in a family, any family, regardless of culture, you don't have a fight that solves everything, you know? You don't have a conversation that fixes everything. It's a year-long ongoing traumatic experiences, and conversations go nowhere, and that's what this movie was. Like, when a scene started, you know that we're just getting a glimpse of their fight. You know, this fight started hours ago. We're just here for this one scene. And the fight probably went, goes on all night. But we're just getting a glimpse, and there's so much more to it. But again, thank you guys for... Again, I'm honestly, like, thank you for your show. Because I find, also listening to your show, I also find there's a lot of things that I start, like, thinking about as well that I normally wouldn't have thought about. About movies that I've already seen, you know what I mean? So I really love you guys' show. I think you guys should continue in. Don't ever give that up. And I apologize for the barrage of tweets as I live listen to your show sometimes.
No, no one is putting out a podcast to speak to a vacuum. And, you know, when we hear back from people that they like what we're doing, especially people who are Indian, who've grown up with these films and, you know, have these positive things to say and are not like, what are you white people doing talking about our movies? It really kind of drives us to, you know, keep going. So thank you so much. But also, Matt and I do really like your show. And the reason that we give shout outs so often on our show is because we do like to point people towards things that we like so that they can listen to your show as well.
And I appreciate that as well, of course. Before we get to the specific movies that but we're going to compare today, I just wanted to get your thoughts on remakes in general. Like, how do you feel about, you know, the concept of remakes in the film industry?
I guess I feel pretty ambivalent to it. I think if a director or a producer or a writer, whoever is spearheading the development of a film project, has something interesting to say and they want to use a pre-existing story, a pre-existing film, to do that, I think, why not? You know, I think there's been a lot of really interesting remakes made over the years, and sometimes you can take a story and update that to a current kind of sociopolitical, economic, et cetera, whatever context. Or to a different culture. I think of Akira Kurosawa's Shakespeare adaptations, which, are set in kind of, feudal Japan, and those are fascinating and very different from other kinds of Shakespeare adaptations. So I guess I care about the final product. I care about the film that's on the screen. I would never dismiss a film sight unseen just because it's a remake. That being said, I do bemoan how Hollywood keeps saying, well, that was popular a couple of years ago, so we're just going to remake that. I'm starting to find that very cynical. And that is frustrating. I'm kind of sick of how many times we're rebooting Spider-Man. Why do we
But his
keep
eyes
doing
move now. Haven't you seen the latest trailer?
this? I have, and it looks better than what Mark Webb, yeah, Mark Webb was doing with the Amazing Spider-Man films. I hated those. I really like the
Really?
ones. Yeah, I don't like the Mark Webb ones.
Oh no. What I always said was the thing lacking about the Mark Webb movies was the undertone of humor when it came to Peter Parker's patheticness. With what Sam Raimi did in the original movies, and I just watched the first Spider-Man movie, the Tobey Maguire, with my kids, who loved it a lot more than the Mark Webb version, which I think kind of speaks to the quality of both movies right there. But with Tobey Maguire's Parker, no matter the horrible things that happened to his life, there was a sort of tone of aww.
Yeah.
Whereas in Mark Webb's version, like, it was tragically sad, which then seemed out of place when the next scene he's quipping as Spider-Man. Like, weren't you just crying like 5 minutes ago, dude? Like,
Yeah, I feel like Raimi fundamentally understands that character in a way that Webb doesn't. We'll see how the new version is, but like some of my favorite childhood movies are starting to get remade. So there was a remake of Annie, which was
Oh, that was so
terrible.
terrible.
It was awful. And I mean, beforehand, I was like, remaking Annie with a black cast? Like, that's really interesting. I'm totally there. Saw the film. I couldn't believe what they'd done to some of those songs. Like, just didn't make any sense. And now they're talking about remaking Labyrinth. And I mean, maybe it'll be good, but I do kind of have to ask myself, what's the point of this? Are you just doing this out of nostalgia because you think that will get, your Gen Xers and your millennials to pay attention? Or do you actually have something to say? And I think a lot of filmmakers have made remakes where they did have something to say. I just don't think that's current the current climate.
Well, I mean, this year alone, I mean, if you if I mean not sorry, not technically this year, but like last year, it's been kind of, I mean, last year was we saw like these two big what I call fan films essentially being made with Creed and the Star Wars movie. Because
Right,
the
yeah.
filmmakers for those movies were guys who grew up with the original, material, loved it enough, more in the case of Ryan Coogler with Creed, where he literally pitched the story, came up with the story 10 years ago for personal reasons. When he became a filmmaker, he pitched it and he got Creed, made all on his own. So for those things, I think that's amazing. Even if you take a look, I mean, it's not technically a remake, but even like I mentioned with the Deadpool movie, that gets made solely on the basis of the people wanting to make it, dedicating their lives to making it. I find those situations where a remake is great, and I think you walk in with a better expectations for those remakes. But like you said, when it's a kind of like, for example, the Labyrinth situation, I thought the timing of that was terrible,
Yeah.
for that announcement, and that already puts such a dark sort of a tinge on that remake. Because even if they were coming up with it 5 years before, and they happened to announce it, tragically at the time of, Bowie's death, it's still kind of like now you're going to be that's in your head now. Now you're going, well, are you exploiting that situation, or did you actually, have something new to say about it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll see if it even comes to fruition, but the timing did seem slightly opportunist in a really
Terrible, yeah.
negative way. I will say, though, as far as cross-cultural remakes, I'm a lot more positive. So when other countries remake films in their own language with their own stars, I'm really for that. I know a lot of people bemoan the fact that, oh, Hollywood, audiences in the US won't read subtitles, so they
Oh,
have
shut
to
up.
remake foreign language films. But the reverse is happening all the time. You see this in Bollywood, you see this in the Chinese film industry, and all over the world. And I think there is something to say that, when there's a story that connects with audiences, that people will want to see that story in their own cultural context and with their own stars. And so I think that's a really positive thing. And so, all the power to them, I
I
guess.
completely agree with you on that. I mean, again, and I don't understand why people bitch about that still now, given some of the classics of, like, let's say Hollywood, as a, as a benchmark. Some of the classics of Hollywood movies are based on old movies. Like you mentioned Kurosawa, and Kurosawa's movies have been remade up the ass, like in Hollywood. Like, and I don't understand how you can still think that that's not a viable concept today. Especially when you're remaking those remakes. Like, The Magnificent Seven is being remade again, and you're kind of like, wait, what?
Well, and The Magnificent is a Seven is a classic. Like, no one bemoans the fact that The Magnificent Seven is a remake from a Japanese film, and that, audiences at the time didn't want to read subtitles because
Ugh.
they took the story and adapted it
Samurais are
to the
boring.
Western genre, which spoke to
Yeah.
Americans at the time.
I guess. It really doesn't make much sense. I mean, like, I've been trying to do, I wanted to do like a triple feature kind of remake comparison show where I take, Seven Samurai, The Magnificent Seven, and Sholei. But now you've got so many offshoots of these remakes of remakes. And now you've got, The Magnificent Seven being remade and Sholei's been remade, and I'm like, I can't put this thing together because I don't know which remake to focus on.
Just pick and choose the ones you
Yeah,
like.
I guess. With
Yeah,
a
I don't know
disclaimer of
why.
this is a remake of the remake from the remake of the original.
I don't know why they're remaking The Magnificent Seven, but I will stand up for the original Hollywood film.
I'm down. I mean, given the cast and the maker of the new one, I'm okay with it.
I guess we'll see. Who's making it? I didn't read about those.
Antoine Fuqua, which I think he did Training Day.
And Equalizer, which I hated, so
Yes.
I
You
don't
didn't
know. I
like
guess we'll
Equalizer?
see.
That's terrible.
I didn't like the Equalizer.
No. So when it comes to remakes, like, you don't, I mean, you said you were kind of ambivalent to it, but at the same time, I guess you have an issue when it's just kind of like a cash grab situation, right? That we're just gonna capitalize on the success of a previous movie, by doing it again, kind of situation.
Yeah, like I said, I'd never dismiss a remake sight unseen. I'm always interested in the finished product on the screen, as opposed to kind of all this stuff you hear before a film is made. And people seem to make so many opinions before a movie even hits the screen, and I don't really understand that. I don't understand why John Carter was dead on arrival.
Oh my God, yes.
I really liked it. I was really excited. And people have just decided before some of these movies come out that they're not worth it. And I think that happens a lot with remake. I actually really liked the Carrie remake that came out a couple of years ago, the Kimberly Pierce film, which is very, it borrows a lot from De Palma's film. But I thought, totally worked as kind of an update of that film. I thought it was really interesting. But everyone, the horror community decided, there's no reason to remake Carrie. We're not even going to go see it. I will make my
Yeah.
judgment after I see the film, but I am finding that, I'm cynical towards Hollywood to a certain extent, and I dislike it when I see something that I think was clearly made to capitalize on a nostalgic trend and not because someone had something to say about it.
Especially, I mean, especially when they end up kind of taking everything away from the original that they're remaking. Because it's kind of like, if you're going to remake it, remake it. Like, why have you changed it so much that this is a completely new thing that has nothing to do with the original? Let me get your thoughts on, speaking of remakes and kind of, things getting bad press when they come out. Did you take a look at the new Ghostbusters trailer? Yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
It looks interesting. I guess I'm always somewhat interested in what Paul Feig is doing, even though I wouldn't say I love any of his movies. Spy, The Heat, Bridesmaids, we're all fine. Freaks and Geeks, I also think is fine. Female Ghostbusters, though, I think it's a great concept. I like Chris Hemsworth as the administrator. I think it could work. I hope that it still balances kind of that tone of like a slight edge, like a slight raunchiness, which I remember a lot from the original Bill Murray Dan Aykroyd film. You know, all these lines about, yes, this man has no dick. And I remember as an adult seeing Ghostbusters, and I was like, oh my God, that's a blowjob joke with the ghost.
I just saw them with my kids because I have two girls, and I'm like, they're definitely watching the new Ghostbusters movies. And I was a little surprised at how much they liked it, first of all. Secondly, there's those lines where I'm like, oh God, you know, like I mean, that's a little graphic, you know. But
'80s were a different time.
It was amazing though. I liked it. I don't know if you know, but the Ghostbusters trailer is getting a lot of shit for. First of all, a lot of people were predisposed to hating it just on the basis of Ghostbusters, but women. And now with the trailer, the biggest controversy now is the fact that, you know, the three white people are scientists, and then you've got, like, the only black main character in the movie reduced to, like, you know, ghetto jokes and you know, just cultural kind of stuff, which I just watched the first movie, and I'm like, well, the black guy there isn't a scientist either. He kind of comes off the street, too. I mean, again, it's not as obvious as they made this, the trailer seem like in this movie, but... I get the you know, the anger. At the same time, I don't get why people can't just chill and just watch the damn movie.
Yeah, I think people need, like, criticize the trailer. That trailer wasn't cut.
Oh, it was horrible.
Way to present the film. But that doesn't mean that the film itself is going to be bad. That doesn't mean that the film itself is going to be racist. We don't know. We haven't seen this film.
And the thing is, and if you
so
if you
quick to make these generalizations based on, you know, 3 minutes of cobbled together footage by a marketing company that probably hasn't seen the whole film either,
and out of context jokes,
exactly.
You know, you don't have the setup, you don't have the payoff, you're just getting that one line. I mean, I find if you take a look at some movies and you boil them down to just the cultural racial jokes, you know, Rush Hour could come off as racist. You know, if you just boil that movie down to, like, just those jokes, you know? Any Kevin Hart movie. You know what I mean?
Oh, I hate Kevin Hart.
but any Kevin Hart movie, you boil it down to just, you know, the black jokes, or, you know, can come off as really offensive, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, so... are there... No, so, do you have any remakes that kind of... that you like, that would you would consider, like, some of your favorite films that were remade from anything else?
Yes, I wrote a list. I quickly wrote a list.
Nice.
And yeah, I would say these are definitely rank among some of my all-time favorite films. So David Cronenberg's The Fly.
Nice.
Obviously. Mm-hmm. Big Cronenberg fan.
You know what, I'm gonna write these down as well so that I can have you back for these movies.
Okay. And also Carpenter's The Thing.
Right, of course.
I think those are both such classics of kind of horror cinema that people don't even realize they're remakes.
completely guilty of that myself. Up until a couple of years ago, The Thing, I'm like, there's another one? Yeah. This one was so good. So yeah, no, I completely understand that.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of The Maltese Falcon with Humphrey Bogart, which is a remake.
Nice.
And I also personally consider Rian Johnson's Brick a remake of The Maltese Falcon, so both of those. William Friedkin's Sorcerer, which is a remake of The Wages of Fear. I really liked Gareth Edwards' Godzilla.
Yes.
I thought it was great. I was kind of surprised by some of the never good reaction to it. I thought it was awesome.
I felt a little cheated in that because the trailers focused so heavily on Bryan Cranston.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of people were upset with that.
Yeah, post Breaking Bad, like, they made this seem like the reason that I wanted to watch the movie ultimately is that scene where he's, you know, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen Godzilla, but the scene, right, you know, when his wife is, you know, trapped behind the thing, and there's this, you know, this shot pulling up to him of him, you know, looking devastated. Yeah. So literally my only, what sold me on the Godzilla remake was, I'm like, why is Bryan Cranston crying? Like, I need to see why he's upset. Like, this movie seems a lot more about him being upset and running and doing things than anything else. So I was kind of upset when we got, like, what, 20 minutes of him.
I felt cheated by Juliette Binoche. I remember sitting down to watch that film. Juliette Binoche's name came up, and I was like, I didn't know Juliette Binoche was in this. And then she dies immediately. And I love her, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
James Cameron's True Lies, my favorite James Cameron film. It's great.
Ooh, okay.
The remake of a French film. Cat People with Natasha Kinski, Malcolm McDowell, Paul Schrader's film. It's a remake of a Van Luten film, I believe. Greatest score ever in cinema by Giorgio Romero.
Oh, wow.
And Douglas Sirk's Imitation of Life. I'm a big Douglas Sirk fan. And, well, Imitation of Life is probably not my favorite Sirk film. Definitely love it.
That's not the second time this week I've heard of that movie.
Really?
Just, yeah, completely just from unrelated kind of conversations. So that's going on the list.
I love Sirk. I love that whole, like, 50s melodrama.
Nice. So, and then I guess that explains why you're into Bollywood as well, because melodrama everywhere.
Yeah, Bollywood has a lot of melodrama. I've stated a few times that, like, you know, Hollywood has forgotten how to make the melodrama.
Yes.
And Bollywood hasn't. Which I really appreciate.
If you had any, like, if you had a choice to, or a chance, if you were one of those guys spearheading a movie, what would you remake if you had that opportunity?
I don't have an answer. Partly because, I don't, and I will say that with my list, I eliminated any films that were adaptations of novels or plays or other pre-existing source material. So a film like Andrea Arnold's Wuthering Heights, one of my favorite films of the past few years, that's adapted from the novel, even right. though there's many other adaptations of Wuthering Heights.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't consider anything else. I only considered things that were clearly remakes of other films.
So is there any source material that hasn't ever been remade into a movie that you would want to take the first shot at?
Again, like I've always been very interested in the critical analysis side of film.
Oh, okay.
In film watching and film analysis and in film writing. And, you know, over the years, I know a lot of filmmakers, you know, just like independent local filmmakers here in Edmonton. And sometimes they're like, oh, Aaron, will you read my script and let me know what you think? And I'm like, no, because I'm really not interested in the filmmaking
process.
And that's not to say that I'm not interested in how it affects the films that end up on screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, personally, I don't really want to know that much about a film before I see it. And then looking at how that filmmaking process informed the film, sure. But as far as like the, you know, like who would you like to direct something?
Right, right. Like your like fan casting and stuff like that.
Yeah, I really struggle with those kind of ideas. But I guess like looking at my bookshelf, I don't know.
No, that's fine. That's a fair answer, actually. I find that's actually a very real answer because I find a lot of people nowadays, because movies have just become such a, you know, kind of like a cultural pastime, I find people get really immersed in it. So I find it really refreshing that you kind of were able to separate yourself and say, you know what, I like to watch it, I like to talk about it, I like to think about it and critique it, but anything beyond that, you know, isn't really of interest, which is, you know, a really refreshing kind of a perspective that I don't really hear a lot of people say nowadays.
I guess I'll say if another Dune film came along, I'd be stoked.
Yes, same.
I love Dune.
Yeah.
I love the novel. I love David Lynch's film. I love Hodorowski's Dune, the documentary. If someone wanted to make another version of Dune, I'd be all for it.
Do you know, is there anyone in particular you would like to make Dune? After establishing you hate fan casting like 2 seconds ago?
I mean, other than Alejandro Hodorowski.
Yes, of course.
I don't know. I guess maybe Nicholas Winding Refn, because he picked up a lot of kind of Hodorowski's interest in that film. But I do really like the Lynch movie.
I love the Lynch movie.
And how much I like Lynch's Dune.
Oh my God, I love the Lynch movie. And the thing is, I didn't become a fan of Kyle MacLachlan until like his more newer stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went back and I rewatched him, I'm like, this kid's badass. He was badass then, he's badass now. So I love that movie.
Yeah. Maybe Duncan Jones. We'll see how his Warcraft film is.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't care about that at all. It looks good. I'm just looking at it. I'm like, I'll wait for the game, I guess.
Did you like Moon and Source Code?
I loved Moon and Source Code. I mean, he's a good director. I've been waiting for him to do some other kind of bigger things. I don't really consider Warcraft a step up. Like, it feels like one of those, like, kind of, again, like one of those movies where it is does seem like a cash grab. I mean, not to say it might be great, but I mean, it looks, the special effects, everything looks amazing in the movie. But it's kind of a story we've seen before, though, isn't it? Like, it feels like I've watched this movie. You know, you've got two warring factions, and there's a hybrid lady that falls in love with one of them. Like, we've seen this, so I don't know. We'll see. On demand, all right. So let's get to the reason why we're here today. Now, full disclosure. Broken Horses is a movie that I was following when it was coming out because, again, you've got an Indian director making a Hollywood movie with a full, you know, again, star cast, quote unquote. I was really excited.
The first Indian to direct, produce, and write his own film in Hollywood.
Yes, beautiful. Thank you for confirming that.
Yeah.
But the weird thing is, I had no idea that this movie was a remake of his own original movie, Parinda, from 89. I had absolutely no idea that this was true. When you mentioned that to me, I'm like, shut the hell up. Because nowhere, and the thing is, the coverage for Broken Horses when it was coming out was so little. There was no sort of media coverage beyond, you know, brown guy in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And even like the trailers and stuff, there was nothing that really came out. It was really hard to find any information about it. And nowhere in that minimal coverage was it ever said that this was a remake of Brenda. So.
Yeah, I think at first kind of the producers thought that this was going to hit bigger than it did. And I think then when they saw the finished product, they dialed back some of their expectations and the release reflected that. I remember just being surprised that it, you know, had reviews in like the Hollywood Reporter and Variety at all. Like when I saw this, I thought it was really only going to play to, you know,
Like the NRI crowd or
regional, yeah, like an NRI audience, to your Indian audience, because it was playing at least here in Edmonton in the same theater where all the other Bollywood films play. Fox Star India was releasing it, not Fox. And so then when I saw coverage in, you know, news on news sites that really only covered kind of like mainstream art house and mainstream Hollywood, I was surprised. And then kind of reading back about, again, the production of this, because now I'm interested in the production, I really
What went
feel like they
wrong?
thought it was going to be bigger.
Well, I mean, it didn't make sense though, because even when you look at the trailers were
These trailers.
speaking, they were speaking to like the Indian audience though. They're like the makers of 1942 Love. I'm like, who the fuck knows what that movie is if like in Hollywood? Like, why are you like you're talking about it like you're marketing to an Indian audience, but you know, the movie's got like a cast that is very known to like Hollywood audiences. And the funny thing is, this movie came out the somewhere really close to when Daredevil season one came out last year.
Yeah, it did.
So Vincent D'Onofrio was like riding high on Daredevil, and I'm like, use that! How are you so stupid? Like, put
The
him on all the posters.
trailers also have those weird testimonials from Alfonso
What
Cuarón
the fuck were those?
and James Cameron talking about how much they love the movie.
Okay, so and the weird thing is, so this was those their quotes were on the poster of the first look release of the movie, which right off the bat puts a bad taste in my mouth. Because how are you getting other people's like expert other people to give me credible witness testimony to how good something is before you show me what the fuck it is you're talking about? Like
Yeah.
that to me right off the bat, I'm like, I don't know anything about this movie, but you're parading out famous directors going, this is good, this is great. And also, for one of them, I think James Cameron's quote, and again, I'm using air quotes as I say this, James Cameron's quote has says something along the lines of, you know, Vidhu Vinod Chopra's characters are always, you know, engaging or something referring to his other body of work. And I'm like,
Right.
I'm pretty fucking sure James Cameron did not go back and watch all of Vidhu Vinod Chopra's filmography to be able to make this statement.
Well, I know that like his films have reached a Western audience, because Parinda was India's official submission to the Oscars. And so it was kind of seen, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, because of that. And I know that his one of his previous films, and forgive me, I forget the title, but it has Saif Ali Khan, Vidya Balan, and
Eklavya.
Amitabh Bachchan.
Iglovia, that was his last proper directorial before Iglovia. It's
Yeah.
like that royal
The Royal
king.
Guard.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah. I read that that did really well in London. And so that actually kind of the producers and the agents that eventually approached Chopra that led to this Hollywood production saw that film.
Oh, okay.
And these are guys who've made like The Fighter.
Yes.
These are not idiots.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah,
these are people who've made
I
award-winning
always
films.
felt like there was something suspect about both those sort of testimonials,
Yeah.
especially when they're pushing it. I mean, I understand testimonials when a movie's been released or the marketing press junket, whatever. But when you're pushing that as the first thing about the movie, I find that to be a little suspect. So.
And I guess Walter Murch was a creative consultant on this, which again, like, fascinates me. I love Walter Murch. I don't see anything in this film that tells me that like Murch imparted any
Did
sort of,
anything? Yeah.
and if you want to talk to a guy who knows how to make good Hollywood movies, you can't do better than Murch.
I don't see. Okay, we'll get into Broken Horse in a second.
Okay,
Let's
sorry.
see. Yeah, no, it's fine. I always find with these sort of shows you can't wait to start
Yeah.
bitching.
You did invite me on to rant, and I'm like, I'm not
Oh yeah.
really a ranter. I don't really rant, but I guess Broken Horses really does frustrate
This is what we do here, okay? We just bitch and rant.
me. Okay.
I think I've had one movie or maybe two movies so far that I've recorded where the remake was actually good. I think Gajini and I think Sarkar, based on The Godfather and Memento,
Right.
where those are the remakes that we actually sat back and were like, this was good. And literally, the Godfather episode was me and my guest just gushing for like an hour and a half about, did you like it when this happened? Wasn't that amazing? Yeah, me too. Oh my God. And it's like, I find you need some sort of polarizing opinions or you need some sort of a bad movie, good movie situation to be able to talk intellectually about it beyond fucking A. So, Perinda. Let's talk about Perinda. So, this was my first, I mean, not my first time. I saw this movie when I was a lot younger. Don't remember much about it. Watched it again. I'm blown away at how anti-Bollywood this movie really is. Given not even, and I'm not even talking about for the time, I'm even talking about for today.
Yeah.
Do you want to give us a quick synopsis of what Perinda was all about?
Sure.
Try.
Synopses are my least favorite part
I
of
know. I'm
podcasting.
aware. I'm
Oh,
aware.
you're aware. Sure. Yeah. So made in 1989. It's about two brothers played by Anil Kapoor and Jackie Shroff, who grew up on the streets of Mumbai. And so they were street kids. And Jackie Shroff turns to crime in order to give his brother a better life, sends him off to the US to study. When Anil Kapoor returns to India years later and as an adult, he discovers that his brother is essentially a gangster and involved with the criminal organization that assassinates his best friend, played by Anupam Kher. And he was also his girlfriend, love interest, older brother, played by Madhuri Dixit. Dixit. Oh my God. See, I'm terrible at these pronunciations.
That's okay. It's okay.
Madhuri Dixit. So that really sets up, the central conflict. Anil Kapoor then has to kind of enter the underworld in order to get revenge for the murder of his friend. And Jackie Shroff has to deal with, his disappointment, his frustration, essentially the tragedy that he feels over his brother succumbing to the lifestyle that he has. I think that just about
That
sums it
was
up.
yeah that's and that was great. Good
Lots of
work.
pigeons.
Yeah, a lot of pigeons, weird enough. More
Lot
so
of pigeons.
than
This movie looks amazing. Like I was kind of dreading watching this film because I'd already seen Broken Horses. I'd heard it was, a masterpiece, that it was one of, the best Bollywood films. It's on lists of like the best movies to watch, like the 100 best movies to watch before you die or stuff like that. Broken Horses was really confusing and messy and strange. But immediately this film felt so iconic and so primal. I was really, really impressed with both the acting, the storytelling, and the shot composition. I thought this was one of, like, the prettiest films I've seen in a while, and it just, it felt very raw. It has a very kind of like new Hollywood 70s feel, but yet feels completely Indian, though not completely Bollywood, because again, it goes to places and shows things that still feel really daring.
It's also, I mean, for this guy, the director of Vinod Chopra, I mean, he hasn't made a lot of movies in his career. The ones he's made are, you know, they're always polarizing. I mean, some of them are so, you know, amazing, and some of them are just like, what the fuck was this? Eklavya, for example, we talked about earlier, you know, a great concept, well acted, but something happens somewhere in the middle where it's just kind of like, he's a better producer than he is director, because he's produced movies like the Munna Bhai, you know, sequels, as well as Three Idiots, PK. That's all him. So I prefer him really behind the, I mean, you know, kind of not as a director, if I had to pick. Brinda, I love, like you said, I love Brinda. It went to places with the story that even movies today don't have the balls to go, due to commercial aspects or, you know, audience reaction and things like that. But I was very impressed. And there's also something about Perinna that I didn't originally like, but then when I watched Broken Horses, I did, which is the length of the movie.
Right.
I wasn't that impressed, which, again, movies of that time, you kind of expect that from, that they're usually long. But with Perinna, you can't really say that there was any sort of filler. It was long within reason.
That one dance sequence between Jackie Shroff and Anil Kapoor, where they'd like dress up as babies.
Yeah.
That you might be able to cut out, but everything else, I think, that's true. Essential.
That's true. I'll agree with you on that. But
that's such a weird image in your otherwise like really gritty, tough gangster picture.
Well, you know what? That song, I mean, that's a formulaic song you have to put in. That's the drunken, you know, bromance song. That's in, you know, Kill Dill had it. You know, that's an essential that's an essential part of this genre, when you have like a buddy kind of gangster thing. But the thing is, I find they went too silly with it, was the problem. Yeah. It starts off, you know, normal drunken niceness, but then there's all these role playing, you know, like on the bed stuff, and you're like, this is weird. And then they get, like you said, they become babies, and you're like, this is creepy. I don't want to watch this anymore.
It is weird. It, like, I think the drinking song in Dawn works, like,
oh yeah, yeah, for sure.
That's like my pinnacle of drinking song, or even the one in Devdas, even though it's like super sad because he's an alcoholic, then you have this fun drinking song. Like those work.
Alcoholism, yay.
This was awkward. I did not need to see Jackie Shroff and Anil Kapoor dress up as babies.
Right? The interminable shot composition that you mentioned, I mean, I noticed there's a lot of, my favorite shot of Brinda is the complete aerial shot when he passes, you know, his exam, to avoid spoilers, where you don't see any faces. You know, you see Jackie Shroff running into the scene. He sees what happened, and he just kind of collapses. I thought that was one of the greater shots of the movie, just because it's a shot where you can do so many things with, you know, the faces and you know, the reactions, but he omits all of that, and you just see it, you know, with their bodies, which I thought was really good. The cinematographer of this movie is actually a guy named Binod Pradhan, which, speaking of Devdas, he was the DOP for Devdas, the 2002 version, with Shah Rukh Khan. And more recently, what you might have seen of his is Two States. He was the DOP on that as well.
Yeah, that movie does look great.
And he's,
I firmly believe that some of the best cinematographers in the world are working in India.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, movies, like... And now that we're able to see them as pristine as we can, because, you know, before I couldn't even watch them because we would get these degraded 35mm prints that wouldn't even have subtitles, so I couldn't watch them. But now we get, you know, these pristine digital transfers. And as much as I bemoaned the, you know, the death of 35mm film, I now get to see how beautiful some of these movies look.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I recently just watched Fitur, which...
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't a fan of the movie itself, but my God, like, it was gorgeous. It was, like, so amazingly done.
They made Katrina Kaif's red hair look good.
Sure. Yeah.
Looked terrible on the red carpet of Cannes, but I actually thought in the film it didn't look that bad.
Yeah, I don't... You know what? When that's... when that is the takeaway of her performance for a movie, yeah, it's not the greatest. Because honestly, that was my takeaway from the movie. I'm like, her hair looks brilliant. That hair is working so much harder than she is in this movie.
But it's,
But
I mean, it's just Taboo looks even better though.
oh yeah, but it's
Everything
Taboo.
Katrina Kaif is doing in that film is a pale comparison to Taboo's
Yeah,
performance.
I wish
And
Taboo
Grace
went a bit
Kalinda.
more. Yeah, we'll talk about this another time. But so now we can't really go beyond. I mean, as much as I love Brenda, we can't really go beyond this conversation without getting into specific spoilers. So even though Brenda is, as old as I am, Broken Horses did come out last year. Not that I don't think anyone's gonna, anticipating to watch this movie still, but still, I will give a spoiler warning for everyone. So from here on out, we will be discussing specific plot details, plot points, including even the climaxes of the movies Brenda and Broken Horses, both directed by Vidhu Vinod Chopra. So be warned, if you haven't seen either of these movies, and I don't know why you'd want to see the latter, please skip to the end of the show to get our Twitter handles and other contact information. So, Aaron, what were some of the changes that, I mean, and there was a lot of them, from Brenda to Broken Horses, what were the more glaring changes that you felt contributed to the quality of either film, or one from the other?
Well, they really did a disservice to Jackie Schroff's character when they adapted Perinda to Broken Horses. I think, and so having seen Broken Horses first, I was expecting something completely different.
Right.
Because in Broken Horses, Jake Marquette, not Jake, Chris Marquette, excuse me,
Yes.
plays that character, Buddy, like he has a developmental disability.
Yeah.
Which it seems like a very Bollywood choice to me,
Yes.
but doesn't work at all in that film. So then when I sat down to watch Perinda and Jackie Schroff, like, was this very kind of commanding,
Badass kick ass.
masculine, and like conflicted figure who really kind of like he had a greater understanding of what was going on than Anil Kapoor. Whereas in Broken Horses, Anton Yelchin,
Yeah.
Jakey, he understands what's going on far more than Chris Marquette's Buddy does. And so that reverse, I thought, was a mistake.
Yeah, it didn't make much sense in Broken Horses because he's supposed to be the innocent one kept out of that world. But he shows up and he's kind of like, shooting guns and he's doing all these things. And you're like, wait, what's happening now? Like, you play the violin, right? Like,
And
so.
I feel like, and I like the feeling that Anil Kapoor doesn't entirely understand the risk of what he's getting involved in. And I think that makes, the tragic climax, which I think is the most glaring and obvious change, that much more tragic. You
So.
know, Anil Kapoor really believes that once you get in, you can get out.
Yeah.
But Jackie Truff knows that's not true.
I find it's weird. I mean, these contradictions or these sort of, disconnects from one movie to the other would make complete sense if they were made by different people. It doesn't make sense when it's the same guy because it's almost like with Perinda, he went, against the grain of what was expected of Bollywood movies or what you would expect from Bollywood movies at the time or even today. But then with Broken Horses, it's almost like he went the complete opposite way. He gave us, a happy ending. He gave us, he exploited the trope of, the character who is not all there, either and that's a Bollywood trope that I despise. When you put in a character just to emotionally exploit the audience, like similar to, the girl in Kick, for example. They do it a lot with, invalids or, people that, development problems, young kids, orphans, fucking divorced moms, shit like that. Bollywood is very good at doing because they want to invoke a sort of compassionate, pitiful reaction from the audience,
It's very sentimental.
which in Broken Horses, you didn't need to do that with that character because Kishan, Jackie Schroff, and Perinda is already so conflicted. He's so devastated. And as the audience, you see that because the first half of the movie, Jackie Schroff doesn't really articulate his feelings at all. He's just running around trying to prevent his, brother from being involved in this stuff. He's not really saying anything. There's just this sort of frantic anxiety within him, which comes off screen so amazingly. But then in Broken Horses, none of that's there because they made this change to the character and made him kind of slow. And then the badass violinist is like all cool and like, I'm gonna protect my brother and get him out of this world that he knows nothing about. Like, it's like, what? What's happening?
Badass violinist in quotes.
Yeah.
There's nothing cool about Anton Yelchin.
No. No, at all. Like, I mean, and listen, and I like we talked about it, I like the kid. And again, I think I feel like he was I don't understand why, Shaw.
I really Anton Yelchin is on the list of like, and I hate it when people are so negative towards a certain performer that, you know, they say that they hate that person. I would never say I hate Anton Yelchin. I just sometimes think he should find a different career. And
maybe try violin for real.
I think that's the cumulative effect of things like Odd Thomas and 5 to 7 and Broken Horses. Again, like all these small movies that he's been in that no one else has seen, but like me and five other people. And I'm just like, I can't stand this guy. But I will say he's amazing in Green Room, which I had the opportunity to see at a film festival a few months back. I think it's finally coming out in April, and it's like totally fucking amazing. That movie rules. And I was shocked at how much I liked him.
I'll check that out. I mean, again, he's not a kid that I go out of my way to watch. Yeah. I've seen like things of him where I'm like, ah, that's nice. And
that's going to watch that film because Patrick Stewart plays a badass neo-Nazi.
Oh, nice. Sold. I am so sold on that. Okay, perfect. But yeah, I mean, so first of all, the fucking whole Jakey thing.
Yeah.
Why does everyone call him Jakey? It seems like it's a name that's kind of like a to endear him to like people that are close to him. But no, that's his name.
Yeah.
Ugh. And his girlfriend is the only person that calls him Jacob, which I'm like, why is that not his fucking name in the movie?
Ugh, and you get a Spanish actress and make her character Italian for reasons that I don't understand whatsoever. Broken Horses is such a miscalculated mess. And I find it really fascinating that, you know, these two films are coming from the same director. Like, how can someone misunderstand his own film so deeply?
And I think
this doesn't happen a lot. And the best example I can think of is Michael Haneke doing two versions of Funny Games. Mm-hmm. So he made an original version in Austria, and then he made an American version with Naomi Watts.
Okay.
And those movies kind of, by the virtue of being shot-for-shot remakes, play exactly the same and kind of make exactly the same point. And so I don't really understand like how a director approaches their own material and chooses to make such different, like such a different approach. And I mean, I understand he's trying to like put it in a kind of, you know, what he sees as an interesting American context, but you can still do that with the basic kind of characters and plot development that you have in Perinda.
But the thing is, though, the thing that frustrates me the most is usually when you have a remake from, like, you know, one culture or, you know, one industry, the other, you know, cultural, national, whatever, there's the changes are for contextual reasons. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's a reason to make this modification from Los Angeles to Dili and all the cultural, you know, changes that come with it. For Broken Horses, it doesn't make sense because you're almost going backwards. Like, you're doing things in America that, you know, ideally should play in India. When originally you didn't do that for the Indian movie you made, you went completely against the grain. You completely, you know, almost pissed off the audience by killing the lead, you know, the romantic leads in the movie. But then you come back to Hollywood where that kind of shit is a lot more appreciated, you know, if it, you know, fits the story. And audiences don't have that sort of, you know, preconceived notions of, you know, good guys can't die, blah, blah, blah. But then you don't do that. And you go completely cliche. None of the relationship payoffs, you know, so none of the relationships in Broken Horses pays off. You can see the kind of things he translated from Perinda, which was some of the brotherly moments of, you know, sweetness and things like that. I like the scene where, you know, Buddy meets the girlfriend. It was a very Indian thing almost, that he just is completely enamored by her because of the fact that it's his brother's wife, or, you know, to-be wife. Those are things I kind of picked up, but they have no payout. There's nothing that culminates in that seen being worth it at all.
Yeah, when I first saw Broken Horses, I was really struck of how Bollywood it felt to me, like all of these kind of conventions that I recognized from watching Bollywood cinema. So, you know, like a character who, you know, is clearly has some developmental disabilities, the crippled character who like is kind of like over the top, this, you know, connection between these brothers, the sentimentality of all of it. And I thought that it was really interesting how those, all of those things usually, they can, I mean, I shouldn't say usually, they can play very well in Hindi cinema.
Mm-hmm.
But if you remove the cultural context of some of those tropes and try to plant it in, you know, American Western type context, it really doesn't work.
No.
So then seeing Perinda and realizing that so many of these things that I recognized from Bollywood weren't even in the original film.
Yeah.
I was really shocked.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, we should talk about that climax in Perinda when they do murder Madhuri Dixit and Anil Kapoor. Like, my jaw was on the floor.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how violent it was. It was so visceral and so violent and so, like, I was distraught.
And the most amazing part of that scene, too, is that it comes moments after they consummate their marriage.
Top Gun sex scene.
Isn't it? I thought that was amazing because you have, like, this really soft, which, again, for the time, I thought that was really sensual. And I'm watching that, and I'm like, okay. And then, you know, in the same time, the bad guys are getting, you know, coming on board the ship. And you know, the culmination of their, you know, first night ends with, you know, them getting killed brutally.
I find Perinda really, like, it can be, it's a very violent film in many places, but it chooses the moments to which to really kind of show you how the intensity of that violence, to really get kind of gory and bloody and just amp it up. I find a lot of other scenes, like you were saying, you know, they go for these overhead shots that feel a bit more removed. And then, you know, when he really needs to drive it home, he gives you those moments. And I really like appreciated that orchestration of the violence. It doesn't feel like this movie that is just, you know, nihilistic and wall-to-wall blood. And, you know, it feels like those moments, those shocking moments, are earned and deserved, which I think takes a lot of talent.
And also, I find, like, so coming back to the relationships of the movie in Perinda, almost every character, almost every relationship that's on screen has meaning. There's a purpose behind it. Even with, you know, Nana Patekar, who plays the bad guy, who essentially, you know, the older brother works for, even though he's technically the antagonist of the film, he has this pre-existing relationship with both the older brother and the younger brother, and he seems genuinely remorseful for having to do the shit he has to do. He's still a terrible person, you know, but he knows that, okay, you know, this kid is working for me, he loves his brother, I love him, but business is business, I still have to do the things I have to do. Where in Broken Horses, none of that's set up properly. Vincent D'Onofrio is a dick who is just manipulating everyone around him for his own personal gain. We get no insight into what it is that he does beyond the fact that he's just, you know, head boss of something. There's, again, and this is where I think the runtime plays a lot of a huge factor in it. Broken Horses was only, I think, a minute, like an hour 40. Perinda was, I think, closer to 3 hours. And I think they use that time to establish those relationships. Whereas in Broken Horses, we just kind of, you know, go.
Yeah, all of the characters in Broken Horses feel like caricatures. I think Vincent D'Onofrio is verging on cartoonish in his villainy. And D'Onofrio is a great actor.
Yeah.
So same with Sean Patrick Flannery as that crippled violin.
Such a waste.
Which also, like, that is such a weird set. If we can come on a bathroom, this shack that clearly has electricity but is being burned by a barrel on fire in the middle of the room. Like, it's such a surreal image.
And for someone who seems to be living in such squalor, he's wearing like a suit jacket.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. I'm like, were you just sitting there waiting for someone to come, like, all dressed up to the nines? Like, I don't understand.
It doesn't make any sense. And the relationship between the characters, you don't feel any of it. There's no chemistry between any of
No.
these people. Like, there's no chemistry between Anton Yelchin and this and the woman playing his fiance, between Chris Marquette and Anton Yelchin. Like, I didn't really
No.
feel it. Between Vincent D'Onofrio and Chris Marquette. Like, I don't even understand why Chris Marquette is so important to Vincent D'Onofrio. I understand
Right.
it's because, like, he doesn't really understand what he's doing, so he's an easy guy to manipulate to murder. But how, really, how useful is that to
Exactly.
you? Like,
See, this is
he's
my this was my
Janet.
biggest like I loved the kid in the beginning who played that character.
Sure.
When he's younger, because you kind of can make the case that okay, he's because of whatever developmental issue he has, he's so emotionally removed from the world that I can see that person not having an, understanding of the morality and ethics of murder and doing terrible things. But the thing is, when he gets older, the introduction of Buddy, Chris Marquette in the first scene, is this happy-go-lucky simpleton. And I don't understand, like, and again, they don't really even in the movie show why he's such a good asset to Vincent D'Onofrio. Like, why is he a good killer? Why is he, his main dude? Because there's no scene, like, if they had at least a scene where you see this, simple, slow-witted guy become kind of, creepily dangerous, at least that would be like, okay, I get it. But they don't establish any of that. We're just supposed to kind of go, okay, he just is somehow.
Yeah, it really expects the audience to do a lot of the emotional lifting that I think the film should be doing instead.
Yeah.
Whereas in Perinda, I think, like, I've only ever really seen Jackie Schroff as kind of these cartoonish villains, like
The
in
older,
Beer.
yeah.
And so I was really struck by his performance here. I didn't really know he had that in him. It was really, like, also refreshing to see young Madhuri Dixit and Anil Kapoor and Anupam Kher. And I just, there's so much depth and layers to those performances. And the film really takes its time to show you the connections between these people and to make you feel for them. That when it does kind of reach its violent conclusion, your heart is on the floor. You're
Yeah.
devastated because things really matter to these characters. Whereas I think the setting is a part of that. I think kind of like, well, you could criticize the film for making it about kind of Mumbai street kids who've grown up as cliche, especially in like a post Slumdog Millionaire world. But that context really worked for me. Whereas this border town in Broken Horses,
Yeah.
this looks like, what town is this?
And again, the thing is, I don't understand the economics of this world. The town seems like it's a ghost town. There's no other fucking characters in this movie. I don't understand what Vincent D'Onofrio's character does. Their base of operations is a broken down film theater in a town that looks like it's falling apart. So I don't understand what he does, what his criminal, business is. I don't understand the conflict with the other guy. That,
No.
essentially kicks off the whole thing and, betrays the younger brother. None of those things make any sense. I don't even understand how Anton Yelchin got to hook up with that guy to kind of double cross Vincent D'Onofrio because it didn't
He
seem
used
like they ever.
connections.
No, but it doesn't seem like he was. I'm saying, like, how did he plan? How did he go behind their back to plan, to double cross Vincent D'Onofrio? Because it doesn't seem like that he was ever, away from their sight. It just.
Yeah, we need a little flashback that explains that
Right?
right
Which again is a Bollywood thing to do. Vinod Chopra put that shit in. Also, I mean, with Perinda, there was this amazing parallel arc of both the brothers. You've got the one brother. This is an amazing scene where Jackie Shaw breaks down when Anil Kapoor's being all high and mighty of, you're a murderer. And Jackie Shaw breaks down and goes, you know what? Then give me my youth back. Like, I did all these things for your well-being, and now you're going to condemn me for it, And he has this amazing, great scene. And then you have, later on in the movie, Anil Kapoor devolving into the criminal underbelly to get his own revenge. So you see that transformation, and then you see Jackie Shroff being hurt by that. None of those things play at all in Broken Horses because the kid shows up in town and literally kills someone an hour later, and then he's like planning this whole thing to get his brother out and have to protect him. And it's like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah, it's really surprising that these two films come from the same director because I think there's such a confidence in the filmmaking in Perinda. The way, like, His shot composition is excellent. The way he uses cross cutting and kind of these parallel storylines, I think, is extremely effective. And then and the way he edits the violence, I was really impressed by. And then you see Broken Horses, and you get this bizarre cross cutting scene with when Anton Yelchin is in Mexico with the gunrunner there and Vincent D'Onofrio's main rival, and they're cross-cutting between the making of this juice, juice and this murder, which, you know, I can see, you know, you can see shades of kind of like Coppola in that, but it doesn't work. Like, I see what he's going for, but it's so miscalculated, and everything leading up to the scene hasn't really imparted it with any sense of meaning. We don't even understand who this other henchman is, by the way, the use of the name hench for Vincent D'Onofrio's character, who's always surrounded by henchmen, is so ridiculous. But we don't even understand who this other henchman is to really, like, for that scene to have any impact whatsoever.
Wait, and again, and in comparison to Perinda, the introduction of Jackie Shroff in Perinda is establishing this gang rivalry that they have with Nana Patikar and this Musa character. So when that comes back, you know, close to the third act, when you see that, you know, Anil Kapoor's character is plotting with him, it fits, it makes sense. Whereas we don't understand anything about this world in Broken Horses to understand any of the actions that, like, they're doing around it. I don't understand. Like, for me, there's no payoff of, oh, he's plotting behind this guy's back. But plotting what? Like, why are they rivals? Like, what is happening here? Why is this such an... Even at the end, the whole self-sacrifice that Buddy does, he spends no time wrestling with the fact that... with the revelation that, you know, his boss, the guy who supported him all these years, is a bad guy. Mm-hmm. He spends, what, maybe all 30 seconds... that we don't get to see because his expression is blank, because that's the character he's playing.
And that scene had nowhere near the impact as the parallel scene in Perinda does. And I think that's partly because, you know, the way that you understand the mob boss's fear of fire and the conflict that he feels over potentially having murdered his mother and his son is very different than what you see in Broken Horses. Again, like, Vincent D'Onofrio goes to this cartoonish place that you can't take any of this seriously. And, like, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star is always playing.
Yeah, what was that? But, that was weird.
I mean, Perinda's using a lot of recognizable classical music, which I thought was a bit surprising and a bit jarring and sort of worked. It's one of the elements of the film. I'm not super excited about the music in Perinda, which is, you know, difficult for me to say about a Bollywood film. But, you know, nowhere near as strange as this use of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Like, why? Yeah.
It didn't... I mean, the music in Perinda, I liked the one aspect of the music, because there was that love song that played... The variations of it played throughout, especially when that is what closed the scene of their death. Like, this melancholy version. I love that song. I love the way they used it. Weirdly enough, I don't know if you know, I caught it and I had to look it up. Sanjay Leela Bhansali was the assistant director in charge of the songs for this movie.
Which, yeah, I did notice that. As a big fan, I did notice that.
It was weird because I saw that he was billed as Sanjay Bhansali in the movie. And I had a hard time finding in IMDb or anywhere else his mention. And then when I was watching the video, I was watching the interview video with all of them, and then they mentioned Sanjay Leela Bhansali and how he was a different person back then. And I'm like, that's kind of cool that you kind of have that connection. But it's, yeah, none of it, again, it's almost like, if you go back, it's almost like Vidhu Vinod Chopra made Broken Horses first 25 years ago, and then was given an opportunity to remake his own movie, and so he improved upon it with Perinda. That is really the sequence of events that we should be kind of seeing in reality.
Yeah. I mean, this is such a strange project, and it didn't have to be this way. No. Like, they have Clint Eastwood's cinematographer, and the movie does look good, except for there's so many shots that, again, verge on either look cartoonish or either look too surreal to really feel like this movie is grounded in any sense of reality. Not that I'm saying it has to be realistic, but it just nothing about it just feels so disconnected, in its visual language as well as its narrative. And like he had a lot of big kind of award-winning Hollywood producers backing up on this. At one point, this film was supposed to star Nicolas Cage, Joel Edgerton, and Jeremy Renner.
I would have, I feel that would have been a lot funner to watch
It's
than.
fascinating to me that those were the names at one point attached to this. And I do admit I kind of want to see the Nicolas Cage
Right?
version of this.
Right?
Bad Nicolas Cage performance, good Nicolas Cage
Doesn't matter.
performance.
It's Nicolas Cage. Doesn't matter. It's
Exactly.
all good.
Exactly. Even when he's screaming about the bees, I'm still interested in Nicolas Cage, whereas I can't say the same for these actors. Even
See,
when Cage is doing a bad performance, I still enjoy it.
of
Whereas
course.
here, like, I love Vincent D'Onofrio, but I hated him here.
Yeah,
I'm just,
but
you were
not in a
so
good, not
better.
even hated in a good way though. Like not hated that he was a bad guy, but the fact that you just it didn't sell. What so there's an original character in this movie in Broken Horses that we didn't get in Brenda, which is the father of the two kids.
Right.
And
He's
it's
the
such a
kind of one New York
waste. This
too.
is the like there's I have a lot of issues with the casting of Broken Horses. Chris Marquette, I think it was horribly miscast in this role. Say what you will about Yelchin, I think he was okay. But Sean Patrick Flannery, I don't know why he's in this movie. I don't know why he's in a role like that. And Thomas Jane plays the father, and that's what the movie opens with. Their father's a cop, small town sheriff at this border town, and he gets gunned down.
Gets
And
nothing to do.
which yeah, and it's such a waste because why don't you put Thomas Jane in the Vincent D'Onofrio character? Or you put Thomas Jane as even if you wanted to give him a smaller role, have him be the rival guy. Why do you put him in a scene in one scene and then shoot him in the head and he has nothing to do?
Yeah, they could have done so much more with Thomas Jane. Like, I mean, it's a blink and you miss him
It's terrible.
performance, and totally unworthy of, what Jane can bring to a film.
And when I told you, like, I mean, when we were talking about the planning of the show, I was telling you that this movie featured some of my favorite smaller actors. I was talking about people like Sean Patrick Flannery, Thomas Jane, D'Onofrio, and Yelchin. Chris Marquette was nowhere on my radar. I'm thinking, oh, he's just a supporting role.
He's not on his radar.
Yeah, you know who he is to me? He's the horny pervert guy from Just Friends, that Ryan Reynolds movie.
Oh
That's
God,
where
yes.
I know him from. And now I'm seeing him in this role, and I'm like, I don't see it. So, yeah. So I don't know what happened here, but it was obviously a failed experiment. In terms of box office success, obviously we mentioned earlier, Brinda is considered to be one of the greater Indian movies, Hindi movies of all time. It was the Oscar selection for Best Foreign Film from India that year. It won lots of awards. Nana Patekar, I think, won for Best Supporting for the National Film Awards. Whereas on the flip side, Broken Horses, I believe, I mean, officially they say it got mixed reactions, but I don't see
20%
anything.
Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm pretty sure it's definitive how bad this movie was and how badly it was received. Money-wise, I don't think it did anything. I don't have numbers because really, who gives a shit about Broken Horses at this point? But yeah, so objectively speaking, if Broken Horses wasn't a remake of Brinda, Aaron, what would you think of it as a movie that's known? Would you let people? Would you tell people to watch it? Would you recommend this to anyone?
I would only recommend this to people if they are curious of how of a failure. Like, I would only recommend this film as a curiosity, as a film that, like, to see how you can, if you take Bollywood out of its context and try and adapt it to a quasi-American one, how it fails.
Yeah, no,
But I
and I
think
completely agree with you.
I think Perinda is a must watch. Like, I think that Perinda should rank among like some of the greatest gangster and crime films worldwide. I thought it was amazing.
And just again, completely not Bollywood. I mean, for given what it does with the story, given how it's made, again, one of my biggest complaints of watching movies this old are the fact that there's at least 40 minutes of footage that is unnecessary. You've got comic relief bullshit happening. You've got, dumb subplots that don't make any sense to anything. Whereas this movie has none of that. Even the songs in this movie, not counting that one ridiculous drunken song, even the songs aren't terrible to watch. You can watch them
Oh.
and still be in the moment of, you know, the tragedy, the romance, the whatever. And it's not out of place. Like, for example, Gajini, one of my biggest complaints was the songs had nothing to do with that movie. There shouldn't have been any songs in that movie. Whereas...
Well, they stuck a romantic comedy into Memento.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Gajini, a friend of mine, she was talking to one of her coworkers because she came over to watch Gajini with us. And then she was talking with her coworkers about it. And her coworker said that that was her favorite film, but only the flashback portions.
Ugh.
There is a romantic comedy in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
strange, but yeah. I love it.
But again, that's just another way Bollywood tries to like kind of mainstream and commercialize everything, right?
Yeah.
Which, again, I feel like with Broken Horses, that was kind of where the ending went. That, mm-hmm. you know, we can't kill off the main character and the love interest. Even though in a Hollywood movie, that has no impact. Like, no one's coming to watch this movie for, you know, what is it, Maria Valverde or whatever the hell her name is. We're not here to watch the love story because there is no love story in Broken Horses. So at the end of it, for them to come off with a happy ending makes no sense whatsoever.
Especially in this genre, you know, people are like, this is an anyone can die type of genre. So why you let the happy couple survive? Well, I mean, I don't know who I'd want to survive in this movie, though, because everyone is lackluster. Everyone falls flat, so none of the death really has any meaning the way it does.
I would have loved if that movie ended with everyone dying and Sean Patrick Flanagan was still alive narrating the whole thing to, like, some tourists or something.
Sure.
Some Mexican coyotes.
Sure. But I was really happy to go back and see Perinda, partly because, you know, Matt and I become such big fans of people like Anurag Kashyap and Vishal Bajwa. So to go back and kind of and really see what to me seems like a continuum of style, to see someone who really broke the mold and how other directors, that has paved the way for other directors, I really appreciated that. Because right now, like, Chopra to me is, you know, he's the director of Broken Hosers and the producer of things like Three Idiots and PK, much more mainstream commercial films.
The guy who can put together really a good movie than really make one himself.
Mm-hmm.
Until Perinda, yeah. No, that's, I felt the same way, because, I mean, I've seen, before revisiting Perinda, my experience with Vidhu Vinod Chopra was that fucking, that tacky, loudmouth producer who's always on the press junkets for PK, Three Idiots, and he's just fucking tooting his own horn. Like, who the fuck are you? Right, kind of a situation. I knew he was, you know, a director back in the day. He made some good movies. But I'm like, you're not, like, I don't associate a guy like you to a guy like Three Idiots or PK or Munna Bhai. But then I watched this movie, and it's still, when I see him in an interview, there's a huge disconnect for me to go, this loudmouth, you know, arrogant motherfucker made this amazingly, you know, complex, layered movie. Like, I don't get it. So
it's the same way I feel about Quentin Tarantino.
Hey.
Please shut up in every interview you're in, but give me your movies.
Yes, fine.
I love his filmmaking. I hate watching interviews with
but
him.
He's a proxy, though. I mean, his movies always have a character that's him. He writes himself into every single movie. Like, a conversation, a sequence is always him.
Yes.
And I love hearing him talk, because then you get that unedited, unfiltered version of it. So I had, All right. Well, I feel like we've disagreed a lot on this podcast so far.
I'm sorry.
No, don't. That's what this is based on. Okay, you disagree with me, and although I feel like I have to apologize more for liking Yelchin.
Like I said, I mean, it's all relative.
Have you seen House of D?
Terrible movies he's been in, like I have, then you're not predisposed to.
Have you seen House of D?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so that's where I first saw this kid. And I think he was really young in that movie. It was directed by David Duchovny. It had Robin Williams in it. And actually, weirdly enough, it had Robin Williams playing a developmentally slow character. That was my first introduction to Yelchin. He was amazing in it. I loved the movie. And I feel like that nostalgia is what carries over every time I see him on screen, which is why I might be not, you know, I might be less than objective when it comes to his performances. But again, I haven't seen enough of him to even argue with you about how amazing he is. Because, again, Victor, that's all I've seen.
I'll also give him Only Lovers Left Alive. It's not like he carries that movie by any means the way he does Green Room, but he's also pretty decent in Only Lovers Left Alive.
See, so you agree he's great.
He's great, but that doesn't mean that if he delivers a good performance, I don't appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, and then again, I feel like that's also what most people have trouble separating when it comes to actors and stars, especially in Bollywood, whereas they will love a performance, not for the performance of the movie, but because they like the actor, and vice versa. They will completely, you know, shit on a movie or a performance just because they don't like the actor or the director. And because Bollywood is so much, like, a gossip culture, like, the media coverage is all, you know, the actors and the people selling the movies are not selling the movies, they're selling themselves. I find that it gets harder to kind of disconnect the actor from yourself. Like, we talked about this, I think. You guys talked about this a little bit on your last show as well, like, the star culture with Salman Khan and things like that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. So, I mean, I think that's what's happening with me and Elchin. But I concede to you that he might not be the greatest actor ever. Okay. All right. So, Erin, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it. I know it was really fun. Why don't you let people know where they can get a hold of your show and, you know, your website, things like that.
Sure. So you can find mine and Matt's show, Bollywood is for Lovers, on iTunes. We also have a Tumblr and a Facebook page, so just search Bollywood is for Lovers. We're on Twitter at Bollywood Pod. I also do a weekly show with Paul Matwichuk called Trash Art in the Movies, where we compare highbrow cinema to trash, to lowbrow cinema, and then declare a victor. And you can also find that on iTunes and on Twitter at Trash Art Movies and on Facebook. And you can find me personally on Twitter at Erin E. Fraser, ErinE Fraser.
So this was episode 13 of the Split Screen Podcast, where we compared Perinda and Broken Horses. If you want more episodes of the show, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or your preferred podcasting app. Visit the website at blankpagebeatdown.com to listen to the show directly on your browser. Subscribe to the site with your email in the top corner for all my random rants and reviews of Bollywood and Hollywood movies. Follow the podcast itself on Twitter at splitscreen_pod. Follow me personally on Twitter at TheShahShahid. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/blankpagebeatdown. For any emails of suggestions, comments, critiques, hate mail, no dick pics, please mail me at shah@blankpagebeatdown.com. And that's everything for today. I know it's been long overdue since the return of the show. Hopefully we'll try to be a bit more regular and we'll come back with some different and better shows that break the format for everyone there. Happy Easter, everyone. Find those eggs.